Rappin' with Reef Bum is sponsored by Polo Reef, Champion Lighting and Supply, and GHL.
Hey, hey, what's happening, everybody? And welcome back to another episode of Rappin' with Reef Bum. I'm your host, Keith Merkelhammer. So on tonight's live stream, I welcome back Ty Ta from Black Label Aquatics. What's happening there, Ty, man?
Hey, how's it going, Keith? Good to always catch you, sir.
Yeah, yeah. Good to have you back on the show there, Ty. You're now under the Black Label Aquatics umbrella there, huh?
Officially. So, yeah, it's been nice. You know, like I said, I was talking to you a little bit early before this, but good friend of mine in town, Austin, he owns a local fish store here in town, and we've just been throwing it back and forth for the longest time because I used to do, you know, farmer tie frags and do my own thing. And he wanted to partner up, and, you know, it just made sense because he can import and I could grow. So, you know, between the two of us, I'm like, we could find a future together. So we created Black Label so that it wasn't just all about Farmer Ty from that point on. And so it's been great. It's been a great good year and a half, almost two now. So
wow. Well, all right. Let me give the folks that don't know you some background in terms of your reef keeping history. Ty has been keeping reef tanks since 2004. He spends his, well, it's about 20 years, man, huh, doing this.
Oh, we're going to have a celebration soon.
He spends his days collecting and propagating the choicest acros, and is a huge advocate of aquacultured corals. His education in ocean and coastal resources at Texas A&M University at Galveston prepared him for the task of running a coral propagation business and helped him move forward with the creation of Farmer Ty Frags, which is now Black Label Aquatics. He sells his corals on blacklabelaquatics.com. Big emphasis on acros, but a lot of other stuff too, man. Ty is a scientist, daddy daycare dude, and a self-proclaimed coral slinger. Before we start chatting with Ty, though, I want to take care of some business and thank the sponsors of this live stream. My sponsors are really important to me because they make this show possible with their support, and that means a lot since I want to continue to bring on awesome guests to this live stream to help foster a learning environment. Polo Reef, make sure to check out Polo Reef's new YouTube video that drops this Friday. In the second episode of the Polo Summer Relaxation Series, Polo Reef gives us a moment to relax to view of stunning fish close-ups highlighting the vast collection of rare and beautiful reef fish housed at Polo. Make sure to subscribe to their YouTube channel at Polo Reef for video drop notifications. Champion Lighting and Supply. Besides being a place for hobbyists to purchase saltwater aquarium supplies online, Champion Lighting is also a wholesale distributor for many popular brands. If you own an aquarium store or an aquarium service company, contact Champion Lighting through their website at championlighting.com to set up a wholesale account. GHL is my third sponsor. Personally, I am all in on using the GHL products. Had a lot of success using their dosers, Prophylux controllers, Demetra's lights, KH Director, etc. They produce high-quality German-engineered products. For more information or to purchase their stuff, you can visit aquariumcomputer.com/USA. I also sell their products on reefbum.com. And now, through June 30th, save 15% on all Prophylux controllers and dosers. Grab them while you can. All right, so Ty, man, with all that out of the way, how's it going? So it's been, I think the last time you were on the show, you were kind of like in transition, right? You weren't, the Black Label Aquatics wasn't happening, but you were kind of talking about the transition. So talk to us what's changed between the last time you were on, you know, with Farmer Ty Frags and Black Label Aquatics. What's different now?
You know, I mean, the biggest is the addition of Jake. I mean, he's been in the industry. You know, he owned a local fish store for a good 14 years now, I guess. And, you know, he knows the ins and outs of importing. And that was the main conversation we had, even just leading up to it. So the biggest change for me, now I have a partner. Now I have someone else I can rely on things, bounce things back on. I actually have a coworker after, after a decade and a half of not having any coworkers. I actually have a coworker again. So that's nice to kind of have chit-chat and hang out and do whatever we need to do to get things done. But like I said, the beauty of our relationship is his importing side, his ability to get, you know, our focus has always been Farmer Ty Frags, always been mostly acros. But he's opened that all up with Black Label. So I feel like in itself, we are a new identity now with his addition, because one of our biggest selling products is always Jawbreakers. He always pulls in the nicest Jawbreakers, you know, all the multicolored specimens, the purple, the everything.
Yep.
And we've gotten a huge following lately with Jawbreakers and also the torches. He's brought in wonderful torches, healthy torches in, and also on my aquaculture side, I've been growing them too. And fortunately for me, I had got some to spawn too. So that was a fun adventure in itself. But between, like I said, the combination of aquaculture and his importing, it's just been a wonderful relationship. It's just been a perfect match for us. So it's been working really well for us.
So did you increase the capacity at your place? I mean, you're doing this out of your house, right? And,
yeah,
and is so, Jake, he's obviously got, he's got some tank real estate where he's at.
Right. And so the beauty of it is, luckily at his shop, we, there's an unused kind of a, probably about 300-400 square foot that space back there that wasn't just being used at the time. So we ended up just walling that off and taking over that spot for Black Label currently. And the goal was, you know, to get everything over there in one place. It's just, I mean, you know, you're an acro guy.
I am.
If they're happy, they're happy. And if you want to move them, they may not be happy. And so we had a couple of trial tribulations with, like, trying to get everything in one spot. And I said, you know what? Look, I can put eyes on the acros every day. So the acros have stayed with me. So on our side, we keep all the acros with me, where I can daily touch whatever the magic touch that we do to keep these things happy and healthy and do our thing with it. And then he stores everything else in that space that we have with our, have a roughly about 10 tanks in that system over there. And so he has most of our imports, most of our mushrooms, torches, everything else like that, that are mainly not acros. Even keeps all our Colorado sunburst anemones there. So it's been nice, and we're slowly gonna try to transition. The goal is, if it was his perfect world, he would love to shut down that local fish store and go all in with Black Label. And I was like, I'm not going to force you to do anything that, you know, like you feel rushed or anything. But if that happens, I'll bring the sledgehammer and we'll knock that wall down and we'll just take over the whole spot. And we'll just get all these tanks, rows and rows and rows of tanks, and just live it up. Just live it up. So... We've been kind of going over that a little bit and kind of dreaming of the day when we finally shut down that local fish store on his side and just take over the space. But in due time, I think.
So would this be a completely online venture then? I mean, you would just be selling stuff online.
That would be the goal. Like, the goal is it'd be more of a kind of warehouse space, because where his shop is kind of set up that way anyways. You know, obviously we'd allow for local pickup. We'd probably have like one day a week where anybody can come by and, like, you know, locals can come and kind of visually shop. And it'd be nice for us because, you know, we love doing our thing and everything. But once a week, we'd love to be somewhat social with our fellow reefers, especially the locals that, you know, we've seen for like decades. And, you know, we'd love to kind of, you know, shoot around the talk with them about reefs and how things are going and everything else like that, and open it up like at least one day a week just for that. So
Ty was very generous to send me a video of the operation. So what we're seeing now is going to be a combination of your place and Jake's place.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Now you've dropped some pretty cool music, but maybe I should just run this without the music and we can talk over it. Or should I run them with the music? As long as I'm not going to get
your choice, your show, Keith. Either or. I just like I watched it and I was like, it seems a little stale. Let me throw something.
All right. There. Let's listen to some nice music here. So we're gonna.
And we can always talk over it too. So whatever. So.
Well, I'm gonna just run it. We're gonna come back after it's over. How's that?
Okay.
All right.
Sounds great.
Let me mute us, and then we'll play the video and we'll come back. So here we go. Dude, that was some pretty awesome. I mean, the Torch Garden was off the hook crazy.
That's what I usually get the most comments.
You're, and you're telling like, me that you were telling me during that video when nobody could hear you that, those are products of being spawned. Those are spawn torches.
Yes.
Holy
so,
crap.
So interesting thing is, you know, we've been kind of playing around. The goal is, I guess, between Jake and I was that he wanted to unhinge me. He wanted to be like, let me take care of the daily processes. And I want you to just go geeky scientist, okay? I want you to just do what you do. Get out there. Don't worry about getting orders out or this. I don't want you to get behind the science and play with things, you know, experiment. And so one of the things we were trying to do with those torches that we had a bunch of, you know, your named torches like BK Kim, the Grinch, yeah. And what is it? TSA OG. Holy Grail.
I'm you know, not a torch the... guy, man. You know all those names.
Throwing just whatever names at you. But yes, so like these so we had all these named torches, and I kept them in that little system that I was going to kind of experiment with. And so I started kind of doing some fluctuations on like temperature, lighting, duration of lighting, day, like how much lighting gets per day. Temperature is kind of a big one. For me, I didn't modulate the temperature as much as I would say that you do for like acro spawning.
Yeah.
Because some of that, I mean, you can get like a 4-degree temperature differential on some of that. And that's nothing I want to stress the system with because, you know, certain species can be a little bit stressed from that. And so I just did like these minute little changes. I didn't even get my moonlights up yet. I wanted to get the moonlights up and get all that stuff.
I thought that was like a key component of spawning corals.
Oh, you would think.
Yeah.
And so, you know, out of nowhere one day, and it was just by... I didn't even think twice of it. You know, I'm that daddy daycare that what I, you know, I got my three kids going on at home and one of them's at school, one of them's at daycare and one of them's with me most of the time. And so I didn't get a chance kind of, I looked over, I looked at the rack and I'm like, oh no. And I was like, I have Mojanos. Those must be Mojanos. And I looked closer and closer and I'm like poking at the polyps and I'm like, it seems like there's like a hard shell behind it. Like there's some like calcium skeleton buildup. So I just kept looking at it. And you, like I said, I couldn't differentiate it from anything else. It was just this polypy little mass. And wow. Then I looked around and I started seeing them all over the frag racks. And I was like, what is this? And I went, I started counting and I counted like 100+ of these things. And I'm like, okay, it's not Aptasia. It's not Mojanos because it's got a skeleton to it. I was like, could it be that something spawned? And I kept looking at it, and there was torches in there, but there were also acros in that frag tank. I was like, I wonder. And so I gave it some time, and about a month later, I was like, oh, these are torches.
Wow.
And so they all started growing from these tiny little specks that you see in the frag racks, and they were everywhere. Like on the power cords to pumps.
So you didn't try to spawn them. It just happened.
I just started trying to mess with those parameters.
Oh, okay.
And
so, okay.
All of a sudden. And so that's why I was saying, like, I kind of changed the longevity of a day. You know, instead of 8 hours, I went to like 10 to 11. Instead of a steady temperature of 78, I kind of gave it a little 77 to 79, maybe pulled it up to 80, and just slowly kind of progressed it. And it wasn't anything metered or anything like that. You know, in the Apex, you can actually program the season tables and have it kind of do a whole thing. And I didn't even get that far yet because I hadn't even got my moonlights up. And somewhere in there, and I'm not saying that's what did it, but maybe it helped. But yeah, I just saw 100+ little polyps on there, and I started collecting them. So I started popping them off and gluing them on these little plugs. And lo and behold, like as they started growing out, I had 100+ uniquely individual torches. So some of these babies look similar to a parent, but not the same. And there's some that don't even look like any of the parents. So I'm like, I don't even own a torch that looks like this. Where the hell did you come from? And so it was really confusing at first because I'm like, this color, I don't even, where did it come from? And so to me at least, you know, part of me was thinking maybe kind of a asexual, kind of a budding, kind of a drop of whatever gametes or, you know, identical clones that just kind of went around the system and deposited themselves. Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, when I'm starting to see uniquely different torches, well, then I'm like, it has to be something of a sexual, you know,
something happened.
Yeah, something where the gametes of one and on another mixed somewhere and gave us a uniquely hybrid whatever. And so to me, I'm just like, okay, something did happen in here. And so I started collecting them, and I was like, oh, geez, if I can remember right, it's probably spring of last year. And so those little tiny things are, and you saw the video, and hopefully everyone else saw that video, but like towards the very end on that right side of that tank, completely spawn torches. And so they're already at the point where they're splitting. And so there's like 4 to 6 heads on a lot of these single little baby pods I had from spring of last year.
That's crazy, man.
It's insane. And the most unique thing that I've seen is their membrane is insanely thick. Like, insanely thick. Like, you would almost think it was like an anemone. Like, it was so fleshy. It felt like just the base of an anemone. And what's interesting is they've grown down. Like, I've never had a torch wild aquaculture or anything. I've always had a torch start there.
Yeah.
The flesh stayed there. Never moved. And just split heads and split heads and split heads. But the flesh never went down.
Right.
These guys are growing down over the plug.
And crusting.
Onto the rack. So the membrane is literally like almost like an acro encrusting. It is growing down the plug, over the plug, down into the rack. So every time I move them, I have to crack them off the rack and move them to give them more space again. So it's been a very interesting adventure. I'm trying to document everything so I can share with everybody. But it's been a wonderful journey with them.
I was going to say, what kind of research did you do before this to kind of get yourself, figure out some sort of method in terms of what you actually ended up doing? I mean, was there anybody that you followed that, in particular?
I'm going to mess up names. I'm going to mess up everything. But it was the gentleman who spawned the acros at the Horniman Museum. I think his name is Craig.
Yeah, Jimmy Craigs.
And so he released an article of how he did it propagation wise. Even gave the full parameters of what he used to put in the season table in Apex. So that was my goal, to kind of head that way, because I wanted to try to spawn the acros myself. And like I said, I didn't get to the full season table. I was just kind of messing around to see what it would do in my system, because one of my good buddies, John Sorkness, he lives literally down the road from me. And he's working with UT Austin at their coral research facility there. And one of the big things that they've been working with him was trying to spawn acros.
Yep.
And so, you know, he was able to give me a copy of the article, and I got to read through it and everything. And he successfully spawned acros in his system. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to give that a try. I wanted to give that a run too. And like I said, I was just kind of giving it some pacings, because with him, he's noticed that when he's done those summer seasons, temperatures getting like to 83 84, that, you know, let's say like 70-80% of his acros are like, I'm okay, I'm stressed,
yeah,
but I'll live through this. But then he has like that 10-15-20% that is just like, I'm out,
yeah,
and they'll die.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, I'm commercially selling acros right now. I can't just have things die from an experiment. So again, I just kind of gave it a couple of little stress tests here and there to kind of see if my corals would kind of exhibit some type of stress response when the temperature change. And I wonder if some of those stress tests and the variations of temperature and day maybe caused them to spawn. My torches, not my acros, but my torches at least.
So was that the only torch spawning event that you've had so far in captivity?
What's interesting, though, is that, so I moved the bulk of those out of that particular system, and I moved it into another, my backup system, in the same home. So it's in the same fish room, same everything, but completely separate system, right? And just, I don't know, probably like 4 weeks ago, I noticed little baby polyps. Not as much as before, not 100 plus, but I caught about like 10 to 12 of these little baby polyps around. At least three of the systems, or three of the tanks in that system. So I'm like, something happened again over here. But that one I did not do anything with. So I'm not sure if somewhere in the transfer they may have been in the process and just released them there. And that's why maybe there's very little of them. There's only like 10 to 12 of these guys versus like 100 plus the last time through. So the goal is just, as we were talking, the goal is to repeat this process as successfully as it was done before, where I can have 100 plus. You know, that's my goal.
So have you been selling the spawned torches?
Not yet, you know, and this is, you know, the community as itself is angry at me at releasing this, but not selling any of it, or sharing it, I should say. But as I posted on, like, Euphelia Freaks on Facebook groups and this and that, they're like, well, when can we buy it, Ty? When can we buy it? And I'm like, oh, hold on. Like, I still want to, I'm still at the point, you know, I run a little slow with everything going on with my life, but, like, I wanted to, like, visually parent spawn.
Yeah.
See what matches up, see what doesn't, see the similarities, the differences, and kind of make my own little notes as far as their growth.
Yeah.
The difference of growth, like I told you, the membrane is very different.
Yep.
The growth on that is very insane. And so I wanted to document all of this. And then I was like, well, probably about fall, because then I'll have a real problem, because they're splitting so much. There's just going to be so many torches. That at that point I'm like, okay, let's get them out to the community. Let's see what they observe down the road. Is that membrane going to grow just as thick for them? You know, I'm curious, these type of things. So, but yes, eventually, yes, I'm hoping fall is when my experiments will be done, my documentation will be done, and we'll release them.
So you are a scientist and you're still doing research. You're still doing your due diligence, which is that's very commendable, man, that you're not just trying to, like, you know, get these things out the door and sell them and all that stuff. You're actually trying to learn.
I've been getting some heat from it. Yeah, I've definitely getting some heat about it.
Good for you. Stand your ground, Ty. What have you noticed in terms of the, you know, the toughness, the, you know, are these, you know, captive spawn corals, less prone to disease? Are you losing any heads on them? Less heads, let's say, versus any that might be wild imports?
You know, like, at least for us, you know, I had one stressor event in that system. Something happened, one of the readings was off, and out got dosed a ton. And it got it up to 11 point something, 12, off of a usual 6.5 to 7 where it's on typically. And so there was a little stressor event, and I'll say the interesting thing is a couple of my aquaculture pieces perished. They died. They stressed
torches.
Out. They died. Yeah, torches. Sorry. Yes. And they died from that stressor event. None of my spawn stuff did. So none of them. And I wonder if the membrane, it's thicker, maybe it's resistant. They slimed up more, whatever evolution advantage they may have had. But to me, they seem, and that's just objectively speaking, but like, to me, they seem tougher because they survived that one just fine. I've moved them from system to system and system. I've never had an issue. And, you know, the biggest thing is like, what I was finding out, and it's all new to me because Jake is the import guy. I'm the aquaculture guy. And the new thing for me was like learning about the processes, bringing in imports. What happens when we work with these imports? How much do we lose sometimes when we bring in imports? And Jake and I have kind of gotten it down to a little bit of a system, at least for us, where we've had very good success with having very little die-off during the import process. And that's just been a pat on the back for ourselves, kind of achievement for us. Like, yeah, we did it. You know, like things are coming in. They may look stressed. They may not look the greatest. And we've gotten them through the transition to, you know, tank life, but also through the import process and surviving that. And we're not losing much. You know, when we were first bringing stuff in and just kind of bringing them, put them in the system, you know, we'd lose a jawbreaker here and there. We'd lose a torch colony here and there. And as we refined our process, we haven't lost much, which has been great.
What do you think has been the difference in terms of not minimizing the losses at this point?
Well, you know, for us, and the biggest thing, and you would think, like, again, Jake with the imports, me with aquaculture, we kind of clashed real hard into our two worlds and collided, and unfortunately, we found out some things, but some good things, some lessons learned. We never mix our imports and our cultured anymore. We keep them entirely separate from the get-go, and I think for us, that's been one of the biggest changes that we've made. The other big change that we've made is everything coming in, instead of treating as we see, you know, like, oh, this torch colony doesn't look that great. Let's pull it back. Let's give it a couple more dips. Let's try this treatment. Let's try this. We just do it for everything coming in now. So we have a specific tank where everything comes through. Observation, we go ahead and prophylactically dip everything. We go ahead and do a Cipro treatment, antibiotics into the system, and we do a full run. So not just your one-day dip or two-day dip. We do a 10-day treatment on everything coming in. And then we move it to our second system. And from that point on, that's our observation tank, eyes on it, see how everything's doing in that big import. And then on top of that, before we move that to the import system where everything's stable, we'll do amoxicillin treatment, antibiotics again, but a different type. And we hit them for 7 to 10 days with amoxicillin. Then we move it over. And that alone has allowed us to not lose much at all in that problem. And, you know, from a business point of view, you keep them alive, you can make money off of them. And so that's a big thing for us. But from a biological point of view, we're not killing things. And that's the big thing for us. You know, we're both that science background. We're both kind of biologists in a sense. And we just don't want to kill things.
Yeah.
And we just feel bad. So going through those processes, going through these steps and being very organized with it. So we just don't import out of nowhere. We make sure it's our time to import. We bring in enough to fill that tank, and then we just treat them all at once. And that's been our process.
So have these been like in tank or full tank treatments in terms of the antibiotics, or are you just talking about dipping?
Yeah, no, this is full tank, 10 days in the tank system. So, and we do, it's a very low dose antibiotic treatment. It's nothing you would do like a higher treatment of something that you would, you know, like if you see a problem with something, you want to try to treat it. Typically, you might run a little higher on the antibiotics. We kind of run a low dose, kind of just neutralize everything that we can. And then before we reset that system, we'll, you know, dose bacteria back into that system to kind of freshen it back up again for the next batch coming in.
What bacteria are you guys dosing?
You know, I wish Jake was here. He's the one that does the bacteria in there because he has all the access to it. I can't remember what he uses, but I'll shoot you a message once I chat with him and see what he uses on that. It's been a great process for us. And it's a lesson learned because, like I said, when we first were colliding both of our woes together, we lost a lot of stuff and we couldn't figure out why at first. And then we realized, let's really keep these things separate. I mean, and you would think, and I just come from a world of the Colorado sunburst, you know, the anemone.
Yep.
I've been farming them since 2015. They do not mix well with other anemones. And we just always threw it out there and say, do not mix, do not mix, do not mix. And we always assumed it was a bacterial kind of issue instead of a chemical warfare type issue. And it's interesting to see that same kind of scenario apply to everything else. With our acros, we don't mix them right away. Mm. With our gonies, we didn't realize that. You know, we had like beautiful glitter and amaze balls and whatever else. And we'd bring in these wilds and all of a sudden all of our culture pieces were like,
ah, no, you lost some of those.
Yeah, skin was just peeling off the skeleton. Now, granted, those weren't our parent colonies, but still at the same time, we were just like, what is happening that would cause this to just perfectly happy colony and just the flesh would peel? Like, it wasn't like it slowly died. It would just literally peel off the skeleton. And when we stopped mixing the wild and the culture, that was fine. What I do find interesting, Keith, is like it's not like you can't ever mix them. It's just the initial, bringing them first in.
Okay.
So now that we've gone through our antibiotic treatments between the three systems, if there's anything special, like we have one, we haven't even yet to name it, but there was this really amazing goni. And finally, I'm like, it's ready, Jake. It's ready. We went through all three systems. We had it for like almost 12 months now. I'm going to move it to the other cultured gonies. And I did, no problem. So I think going through those processes helps. And then for us, at least down the road, as a business, we can feel better about the fact that, like, hey, guys, we're selling you corals not straight from the ocean. It's gone through our due processes.
Yeah.
So that you may be able to put that goni that's been imported with your goni and not zap all your gonies. And so to us, from, you know, that point of view, I'm like, hey, we might not it might take us a little longer to get everything out for everybody. It's like, oh, I got this fresh import, and you're not going to see it for 2 weeks as it goes through its process.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, I can't maybe not guarantee you, but the likelihood is that if it goes into your system, it's not going to zap your system that a perfectly happy cultured pieces that you have already, because we put it through these processes, and maybe some other vendors don't do that. And they just sell it right off the bat to you. So.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of unknowns out there. There's a lot of invisible enemies, right, that we have in this reef keeping hobby. I mean, there's some that if you put under a microscope, I guess you could see them. But the pathogenic bacteria are pretty much like, you know, that's a whole nother ball game in terms of combating stuff. And there are a lot of unknowns in that sense. But, you know, I guess the, you know, the question is in terms of, you know, the antibiotics and creating resistant strains of bacteria. But with you guys, in terms of kind of being the first line of defense, I think that makes a lot of sense to really try to clean the corals as much as possible. What about other, you know, pests? You know, obviously there's a lot of pests in the hobby, like acro eating flatworms. We've talked about that before, and red bugs, black bugs. I mean, what kind of bugs are what's the new bug out there, man, that we should be watching out for?
Well, last we talked, it was those white bugs. But just real fast, let me touch on the antibiotics and the super bugs, because we run through the full 10 days. So the super bugs, and I'm no expert on it, but like, you know, the super bugs are, it has a higher chance of being created when people run for like 3 days, 2 or 3 days, and then they stop. And then at that point, whatever survived replicates. Ooh. And then they're stronger at that point. And then you do it again. And so you don't run the 10 days. You don't completely wipe them out. That's where you get the super bug. So we make it a point to always make it to that 10 days.
Super bug in terms of a bacteria you're talking about.
Right. Yes. That type of super bug. Yeah. So we always run the 10 days, you know, just like your doctor says, you know, take your antibiotics for the full period. Don't stop. And that's the reason. We don't want to create these super bugs. So so we run the 10 days on both of those. But yes, going back to the pest, what's very interesting is that as an aquaculturist, and then Jake is the importer, man, I see worse stuff from other hobbyists than I see imported in. As weird as that
is. Passing around badass stuff, huh?
I don't understand it, but anytime we've had a situation, and it could be like a local here or somebody that we've, you know, done business with together, and they're like, hey guys, I think I'm getting out of the hobby. Would you like to buy me out? I was like, oh, let's, you know, we see a shot of their system. Like, yeah, you know, we'd love to get that. Let's, and we set something up and we go over there, and it's this beautiful tank. And we start pulling everything. And the minute we go and we dip our stuff, we're like, whoa!
What the hell?
We're like, how did it even grow to this size? The stuff is covered in this, whatever, flatworm or this and that. No. But we'll get like, you know, 10, 12 colonies of maricultured acros or torches or whatever. Not a speck. And to me, I find that interesting because I feel like the people that are in it, the importers, they have an urgency. They have a reason to make sure those things are clean as possible for them too. So I think their due diligence makes it so that when it finally comes to us, we don't see a lot. Those things are pretty clean when they come in for import. Hmm. And we do our due diligence of dipping it because, you know, the whole coral reefing biz, trust nobody.
Exactly.
We don't even trust our own tents.
No matter who you're getting it from. Doesn't matter who you're getting it from. Dip.
It could be from yourself. That's what we tell them. So we move from one system to the other. We dip it. We don't even trust ourselves. We will dip between. Yeah. So anybody, you know, we get the customers like, your stuff is clean, right? I'm like, it's clean to our standards for sure. We feel like there's nothing on it. And said, so should I not dip? I'm like, are you crazy? You should dip everything.
Yeah.
And I sound like I'm a nut, but I'm like, dip everything. Get rid of the plug. Only thing should come in is coral flesh that's been dipped. That's the only thing that should get into your system. So I'm a big proponent of that from any.
Are you still using the KCL, the potassium chloride dip for the acros?
I love it.
You turned me on to that, man. Ty, that was like the best thing sliced bread. You were like, I love KCL. I brush my teeth with this stuff. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I just, and it's so cheap. It's super cheap.
Yeah,
and for us, since we do batches and we do huge volumes, it's been a godsend for us to be able to use that. It's just, it's a clear all, you know, and we haven't run across much that would be, I guess, it'd be harmful, you know, because it's a little more stressful than using Bayer or any of the brand dips, anything like that. But you know, we haven't had much problems with it at all. So
I've found it to be very gentle. I found it to be very effective. You know, you got to get the dose right. You know, there is a certain point in time where, you know, it might not be strong enough and some might survive. The flatworms might survive. But, you know, duration wise and dosage wise, once you get that stuff down pat, man, that stuff is golden.
Oh, yeah. And that's, you know, to everyone, each their own. They're going to, you know, there's a lot of literature out there on what dosage you should use. But, you know, I mean, you can see when things jump right off. Or you can see when the coral is stressed, you're like, I'm going a little too high on that. And, you know, for us, acros, they don't usually care as much.
Right.
It's the other corals that we have to take a little bit easier, do a lighter dose for a longer period. But, yeah, that's...
I had some, what were the flatworms on some Gonies and Alveopora. They were, I think I told you about this. I can't remember the aceol. Flatworms, man. They were all over these, like, Gonies and Alveys and all that stuff. And I was trying, like, Coral RX. I might have tried something else. But what's happening was the tentacles for the Gonies and the Alveys were just retracting into the skeleton. And so they weren't getting, you know, they were escaping the meds. With those dips. But then I tried KCL dip. There was no escape in that stuff, man.
You know,
they just like imploded.
What's interesting, and this may be disturbing to hear me do this, or maybe it's in the name of science, but I actually, under a microscope, had like a flatworm, and I was like, I'm curious, what actually happens? What visually can you see is happening when you do the KCL? And I like put like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 drops near it. And the thing immediately eviscerated itself. Just all the bodily fluids just went right out of its body, and it started deteriorating immediately.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like, it was almost like you put bleach on something.
Yeah.
It was just immediate deterioration. I was like, wow, now I see why it works so well for at least flatworms, you know? And, you know, the larger, like amphipods, copepods, anything like that, they're flying off and dying. The brittle stars are flying off and dying. Legs are breaking off and everything else. Sorry, I'm being so graphic about it. Just visually, I'm watching.
Shell, right?
Like, yeah, I'm like, die, not you, Riddle Star. I'm so sorry, but the rest of you die. You know, like it's just. So it's been interesting to kind of see these responses from that. But yeah, just to see that zoomed in, and there was one that was like, one of the tanks that we got. They had acro-eating flatworms. So I was like, I'm curious, and I pulled a big one off, laid it in that little, and that's the one that I saw. Like literally, it was a female. Apparently, because it eviscerated itself and these eggs just started shooting out of its body. Like,
wow, man, that's like, really, you getting close-up shots there. Jeez.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I recorded that.
Oh, I'd like to see that video.
So I might share it to the masses to see, like, this is what Ty does at 1 a.m. in the middle of the night when his kids are in bed. But, yeah, it was very eye-opening. I'm like, wow, I see why it works so well now. So,
But there's still nothing we can do about the eggs. You gotta. That's why you gotta cut off the bases and
flesh only.
Use a microscope, even if you're cutting off branches and cutting off bases. Use a microscope just to, you know, you can spot a eggs, but I found my eyes aren't the best anymore. But with the naked eye, you can see a cluster of eggs, you know, on an acro. But it does help to have a cheap microscope. You don't need a real expensive microscope or even a magnifying glass, but a microscope is best. All right. Let's go back to the bacteria and the antibiotics.
Yep.
What would you recommend for people? Let's say they're not getting stuff from you. They're getting it from a source that they're not sure they could trust or what have you. What do you think people should have some sort of dipping protocol to prevent the pathogenic bacteria from coming into their systems, whether it's an acrofrag, whether it's a Goni frag, or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, we go way back in the hobby, and from my memory, I never remembered having to deal with
this.
Like our systems, you brought in this came straight from whatever? Okay, toss it in the tank. That was even before we dipped back in the day, and we had no issues. And I don't understand, and I'm trying to put my wrap my brain around why it's different now. Like, to me, I feel like it's very different now. It's very hard to start a new system. Yeah. Maybe it's the accessibility of live rock straight from the ocean. Who knows? But mixing cultured and wild, I've never thought about that in my 10 years prior, you know, or 15 years prior until the last 3 years. I'm like, well, I don't want to mix wild and cultured anymore right away. But at least to me, if I was in someone's shoes and it wasn't a vendor like us who puts them through the due diligence, the antibiotics and everything else like that, if I was in someone else's shoes, I would definitely have another system, even just like a little nano live rock cycling in it, temp always going, put it in a closet, put it somewhere else out of the way. I know not everyone has a fish room. I get it. Just store it away somewhere else that it's just constantly running back there and just live and with good bacteria in it. And then all my stuff would go in there first. And to me, again, it sounds excessive, but I would do a whole antibiotic treatment on that thing. You know, like anything I get in, I would put it in there, put it through his due diligence, dip it, observe, do the 10 days of antibiotics. Then I would move it into the system. And
can acrofrags or whatever, you know, survive? So you want to dip for acro-eating flatworms. You want to, right. You know, you want to treat for bugs, you know, use the interceptor to zap out any bad bugs in there. But now you're also doing a bacterial antibiotic treatment. Do you have anything left after you put the, you know, frags and corals through that kind of ringer?
That is the hard thing. And you know, we come from a very different perspective because we're more commercial setup. So for us, we have the extra tank sitting around. Yeah. We have it stable and running already. So we can put these things through and it wouldn't be a stress. Because, I mean, there's a two-part doser already on those systems, so with the Trident. So we're literally keeping parameters stable as we're welcoming these new pieces. So for us, you know, and this is where I guess part of me is kind of veered away from a regular hobbyist and our setups at least. Yep. So unfortunately, my advice may not go as far. You know, it's not, maybe not as practical, I would say, as ours always set up systems are. But I mean, to me, if I was just going to go straight back to being a hobbyist again, I'm mortified a little bit in my head of getting new pieces, especially if everything's running so great in my current system. I would definitely have a separate little backup that I would run everything through first before it comes across. And I know it's a pain, but all it takes is to see like your amazed Bosgoni or your beautiful acro colony, and you put a wild in there and all of a sudden, and everything implodes. You know, it was funny. I was talking to my buddy down the street, John, again, and I was like, you know, what's been very interesting is that I've never dealt with all these bacterial issues, as I assume are bacteria issues, until like, I feel like when the Malaysian imports came.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a weird thing? That's my conspiracy theory. Oddball, like, where are these bacteria issues coming from? And I feel like some malignant bacteria that was perfectly benign in the Malaysian coral reef system has been introduced to these Indonesian corals, these Australian corals, and it has gone nuts. It is like, I'm going to take over and kill all these acros, these whatever, these endo pieces.
Hey, man, it's not a crazy thought. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, I mean, COVID, you know, I mean, look what happened there. It's just,
sure.
I mean, it's crazy in terms of what can happen with bacteria. Yeah. So I think, who knows? It's going to be hard to kind of like figure out the origin for this stuff, but.
Right. But I'm just saying in the last 2 to 3 years, which is when the Malaysians started coming, that.
You're just saying?
the timelines are matching up and all that. And I'm just like, man, in every system that I had a Malaysian piece in, like a Malaysian acro in, the acro started suffering in that system. And so I had to pull them out, treat them and everything else like that before I went back in. And then eventually the Malaysian piece didn't make it. So I'm just like, I'm curious if there's just some, I don't know. That's just my theory. So that's just my theory out there right now. But
Rob, upstate New York, thank you so much, man, for that super chat. Vermitid snails for sale, laugh out loud. Yeah, what about vermitid snails, Ty? Any tips for that?
We've been, I used to joke that I was a vermitted farmer because one of my systems, it was just everywhere on the rock. And I never saw them as a pest. They're annoying. I'll say that, but I never saw them as a pest. But eventually I'm like, you know what? I'm tired of the rocks looking that way. I'm tired of them, you know, when you stick in my hand and get cut by them. So I introduced bumblebee snails. And again, anecdotal, but I can't see a living one. And I see the, you know, the leftover whatever, but whenever it's feeding time, I don't see the silky webs coming out trying to catch stuff in the water column. And I'm like, this is interesting. Because I literally, you know, because of the connection with Jake being my partner and him owning that local fish store, I just la-di-da into his store, grab a bag, and start shoving cleanup crew into bags. I'm like, thanks, Jake, bye. And I run out of there. So that other day, I grabbed like 20 to 30 bumblebee snails and like dump them into that system. And I swear, like, this has been like 6 months to 8 months later, but I don't see the webs. So I feel like, you know, I've always seen it kind of mentioned on the forums that they are useful against vermitted snails, but man, I think I'm signing off on it. I don't see any live ones, and they're still patrolling the rocks. And I think I found my thing.
I definitely added them to one of my tanks, and you know, to try to like knock back some vermintids. And again, I kind of agree. I don't really see them as being a you know, something that is detrimental to at least you know, SPS. But right. it definitely seemed to knock back the population.
So you. Observed similar then, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like a total like eradication of the of the vermitids, but it definitely knocked the population back. But then I started losing some of the bumblebees, and I never just kind of, you know, I never like really replenished them and all that stuff. So I didn't stay on top of it probably as I should have.
I went kamikaze.
You carpet bombed it.
Exactly.
Bee Reefer, Farmer Ty, Lava Monster is my favorite Millie of all time. You still have that one?
Mine too. I have one little frag that I'm regrowing that from that. I got it from someone. Oh, I love that thing. And I don't think I ever appreciated it as much. You know, I always had a soft spot in my heart for it. But looking back at the pictures and what's available these days, I'm like, it's a ton of rainbow tenuous, but like, when have I ever seen a Millie like that again? And so, whenever I see my old colony pics of it, I'm like, I ache for it. I'm like, oh, I need a colony of that again.
I might have that piece. I can't remember.
You do.
I can't remember if I got it from you or somebody else.
Okay. There's someone on Reef to Reef, GWMS3. He has an abbreviation looking name. Yeah. He has a decent colony of it. So I might just have to be like, hey, cut me a chunk, name your price. I want my baby back. But thank you. Yes, it is one of my favorites too. I love that thing. So,
so let's get back into the, so we talked about spawning. I also saw something about you having plans for raising hybrid corals. What's that all about, man?
Oh, that would be my dream. And hopefully, like what we talked about with the torches, I'm pretty sure a couple of those are hybrid out there. I'll do my comparison to the adults or the parent torches and see. But there's a couple of them that are uniquely different. But yeah, my goal is, and you know, this may be dreaming, this may be just setting a high bar for myself and maybe never attaining it, but I always wanted. I was like, man, could you imagine if you'd set it up and your tank started spawning acros? And so you're like, all right, so I know I can get them to do it. Now let's be a little more specific about it. Let's get these tenuous that are from the same region or something, like, or they're all Indonesian tenuous, and let's have them in a tank and just let them loose and then see if you can create any hybrids. But then on top of that, to be, as you drill down, be even more specific, and one day get a homewrecker colony and, like, say, a Walt Disney, and have those just in the system together as they spawn. Mm. And so you have some kind of hybrid Walt homewrecker. this is part of me that's dreaming. I'm like, oh, that would be amazing. But at the same time, as we're, you know, seeing in the news about another coral reef bleaching and these events, and it's 100 degrees in Florida reefs right now kind of things, and then you think, like, man, if we could just start hybridizing, we would create our own unique pieces that have lived in captivity, that are used to captive conditions, that are hardier, harder to kill, I mean, Homewrecker, you blink sometimes and that thing will start dying on you. So it's just, you know, it's one of those things where I'm like, yeah, it's a goal of mine, and it's a goal as a greater community for our whole community and our hobby to have that eventually head that direction, you know? So
yeah, Acro Killer is saying they did this in Germany already. They have a hybrid tenuous.
Oh, is that the long, I forgot what it was.
I don't know.
It almost looked like an incanade. They were breeding this tenuous that was hybridized, and it was, I had to read the article twice over. I'm like, you're kidding me. Like, really? And I'm like, are these guys legit? And I had to look them up and everything. I'm like, wow, this is really happening. So,
hey, dude, you're kind of like fading there a little bit.
What's happening?
You're like behind a spider web or something.
Is it my time? Am I done? What is happening in here? Oh my god!
Is that like an effect? You like?
I didn't even click a thing.
I mean, we can still see you. I just want to like make sure you're like turning into a ghost.
Oh, this looks like Back to the Future. Like I'm about to fade out because something happened.
We can continue on like this. That's cool. Oh, there you go. You fixed it.
Oh, I'm coming back.
What happened?
I didn't do a thing other than I got closer to the camera. Here, let me get a little zoom in on my face and maybe that'll help out.
Yeah.
That's weird. I didn't even notice that. Thank you.
I was like starting to look. I was like, oh, he's kind of disappearing.
He's phasing out. He's AI. He's not even a real guy. Right. He's like fading in and out. Yeah. Like replicated here. But
so have you had Acro spawn yet? Has that happened yet for you?
I had a random one.
Yeah.
And it wasn't any part of any test. And I have the video still of it, but just randomly, you know, with kids and everything at night is when I get a lot of my work done. So I just happened to like flip on the lights like I usually do about 11 p.m., 12 p.m. at night. And I turn over and I'm like, why is that acro colony bubbling over there? Like it looked like it was like someone put Alka-Seltzer underneath it. And I'm like, what's happening? I get a little closer. I'm like, oh my gosh. And it was just releasing eggs. It was just the most interesting thing. But it was the only one in the system. Nothing else is doing it. It was just that one colony. And I feel like it was a BC teen wolf colony or something that. Or maybe even a Pink Floyd, one of the yellow ones. But it was so interesting. I was like, wow, this is really happening. This is cool. So I recorded as much as I could, collected the eggs like an idiot because you can't do anything with it. I'm like, what do I do with these eggs? It's like, oh, what can you do? Nothing. And I'm like, oh, and they just disintegrated in the water.
Food.
But it was fun to see, and it happened. So,
what about grafting corals, man? Have you thought about doing that?
Ooh. Now, that is something I have not messed with at all or looked into, but that is interesting. I always see because, you know, grafted gets thrown around a term that gets thrown out of the hobby a lot when you ever see these, like, basically, isn't it an infection of a green protein? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
When you get to the basis of, like, a lot of people call grafting. But are you talking about, like, getting a Homewrecker and a Walt Disney?
Putting them together and seeing what happens.
Yeah, kind of like plants, kind of like grafting plants together. Yeah, no, that would be interesting. I thought I saw that some people did that with torches. Did they not? They like cut them in half and put two halves of different torches together, and they fused together, and they grew from there. And just randomly, there was one torch from that spawn, and it had two heads. And one head was like a dragon soulish variety, and the other one was like a holy grail variety. But they shared the same membrane and the skeleton. So I'm like, I just couldn't explain. And all I did is like, I'm just going to show it on social media, but I'm not going to say anything about what it is or what I think it is. I'm just sharing that this odd little spawn from this torch has two different heads. Two completely different heads, which is interesting. But have you done anything with that? Like grafting,
no,
doing anything?
I have not ventured into that space. I had a, I think I had a natural event in which I had a, what do you call it? A, there was some sort of infusion, protein infused thing going on. You know, you're fading again, man.
Someone changed the past again. That's a terrible back.
I think I had like a protein.
Let me see if I can change the
lighting. You're back.
Oh, okay.
Or you want to step away and change the lighting or something like that?
Yeah, let me right. Swap some things real fast, and maybe that's what's causing me to fade out. They're not recognizing me as a real person.
There you go.
Like
Yeah, now you're crisp, clear.
I bet I'm your first guest at Fade.
Yeah, I was like, I've never seen that before. I was like, is Ty like not on this earth anymore? Is he? He's a spirit. The spirit of Ty now. Is that what's going on?
Had to finish the interview, yeah. Keith. I'm out. Yeah. Had to finish the interview.
So. I know. I think I had like a protein infused thing going on with one coral where I just it was a can't remember what it was an acro that was it like a tabling acro, and it was like a red tabling, pink tabling acro, and I had like this green at the base that all I was like, where the hell did that come from? You know, that just
like at the base of the whole collar.
Yeah, like at the base, kind of like and it's just kind of like this one patch of green. So yeah. There must have been some sort of protein infusion. I believe that's the terminology. That that was so that was really cool. But
did it ever spread, or did it just kind of stay in that area?
I took that. That coral was in a my 187-gallon display tank, which I rebooted. So I took that out and you know, I fragged it and. I don't know where the hell happened to it.
It's in some other system somewhere.
Yeah. So aside from all this voodoo magic in terms of like spawning and grafting corals and fused corals and all that stuff, what are the hottest corals out there these days?
Oh, geez.
What are you guys seeing?
You know, at least in the mushroom world for us, is that OG Godzilla. Like it's OG just Godzilla. It's a bounce Yuma. It's a, you know, our hobby and its names, but this thing is, it's beautiful. And to me, like, mushroom-wise, Jake is more the mushroom guy than me, but, like, you know, my standard is the WWC OG Bounce Mushroom, you know. Yep. That's like a classic. It's got those beautiful oranges and reds and the big bubbles and the coloration on that. But this Godzilla, I mean, the bubbles, like the adult, we have a mama that's like, probably this big. Uh-huh. The bubbles are like half dollar size on this thing. Beautiful bright green, beautiful orange on it. I mean, the minute we put a spawn or a baby on the website, it's gone. That's been one of, for us, any color mix of jawbreakers has been going crazy for us. From an acro point of view, Reef Raft Canada LV, I love that thing. And I'm not like, people may frown on me, acro lovers. I'm not, I appreciate the rainbow tenuous, but that's not all for me. Yeah. Like, I appreciate all the different varieties, like the Encanadas and all these other things too. But, you know, like the hobby's been very into the rainbow tenuous, but that Reef Raft Canada LV is just, every time I walk by the tank and the blues are on, I'm like, whoa, like it's just lit up like a Christmas tree.
Really?
That one's pretty cool. The, what was it, the CCH Chewbacca. That Millie is insane because it's hairy, but colorful hairy. Like I've had plenty of hairy Millies over my life, but they've always been kind of a shade of brown, purple, whatever else like that. And the beautiful colors hidden underneath the shade, you know, the polyps. But this one is like purple with bright green, and it's just, it's impressive. I gave it a thumbs up. I'm like, man, this is a beautiful piece. But those are the ones that jumped out in my head right now. The BK Kim, the Grinch Torch, that's a very impressive holy grail. I don't know if it's the best holy grail. There's so many of them out there, but from the ones that we have, it's impressive. And that one's always one of those that's hard for us to keep on the website. But yeah, those are the big ones for now. That at least off the top of my head.
So what corals are out there that you don't have that you really want?
Oh God, you're talking to old acro guys. I'd love to have a purple monster back. That'd be one of those I would love to have back. But that also means I'd love to throw metal halides or T5s at least back up instead of my LEDs. But, geez, I'm trying to think of all the stuff.
I got the that Giggs Mothra Millie from you, you know, years ago. Yes. Man, that thing is sick.
That thing is so hairy too. That's one of those that I
do have the Tyree Purple Monster. I lost my my mother colony a little while ago.
Oh, yeah.
I had a luckily I've got a lot of backup frags. I'm gonna have to start.
You banked it.
Yeah, yes. I banked it in two different systems and multiple frags and stuff. But I had a glitch in my light timer. And the light stayed on for like, I think it was 27, 28 straight hours in a row.
Yeah.
And the frickin' Tyree Purple Monster Colony, and that one frag tank was like the only one that like said, nope, I don't like that. And so
crazy. Yeah.
And so,
because that's the par loving, give me the light coral right there.
Yeah.
And it was like, no, that's too much. I'm out.
Yeah. No, so it was.
Sorry to hear that. It always breaks my heart every time I hear a Purple Monster go up. I'm like, oh, because you and I at least know how long it took to get it to like a fist size or whatever else it was.
Years. Years.
Yes. Like literally older than my 4-year-old before it got.
So, dude, you've been keeping reef tanks for like 20 years. What have you done, you know, in the like last 5 years, let's say, in terms of methodology changes? Have you done anything, or have you kind of stuck to what you knew when you started?
You know, I think, and this is just looking back, what got me into trouble was trying to change it. You know, is that weird to say?
Like, no, I get you.
Man, I tried, I can't even remember what it was, a denitrator. Bad experience. And again, it maybe I didn't tune it right. Maybe whatever.
Cratered your nutrients.
It cratered my nutrients. So it did its job, but it also, I feel like, released. I can't even remember what it was. Not carbon monoxide. What is it? Is sulfur?
Sulfuric acid. Whatever.
Is that what it is? I'm trying to remember what it releases during that process.
I don't
but
know.
Whatever it was, I felt like was because I didn't tune it right, and the ratio was off, and it started producing that, and then it started getting into my system, and I feel like that kind of because acro started turning black.
Black.
So to me,
I've never
that's
seen
not
that happen.
No, it was I had at least 8 colonies go black on.
Wow.
Me. And I'm like. Well, and they stayed alive, which is weird, but they went black. And I'm like, something is hitting this water. And I finally shut it off. But by then, you know, I paid the price.
Yeah.
And I think my good buddy, Bubba Q, Bubba, he works at TSA now, but he was running it with me. So we were like, hey, let's buddy this. Let's do this together, guy. And then we were like, oh, what have we done?
You both got black acro sitting.
So we both blame that for a good amount of loss in our system. Oof. From that, trying it. So to me, it's like it was just getting back to the basics again. And again, I'm a bad example because I've gone so much more commercial sized with everything. And so it's not just a hobbyist tank and a hobbyist size anymore. But for me, I was just keeping it the basics, not mixing corals anymore. And just, like I said, running with good live rock to start with. I don't use a lot of dry rock to start systems. Those have been the biggest things for me. And, you know, nowadays we can monitor everything now with the NP, including nitrates and phosphates. So like it's made it a dream for us to be able to monitor multiple systems with less personnel, you know? So
yeah,
it's been very helpful for us. But so, like I said, I've become that what is it, the boomer, whatever, the boomer acro keeper, the boomer SBS reef tank guy that won't change his ways. And so it's worked
nothing
for me.
Wrong with that, man. Todd from Champion Lighting Supply says it's hydrogen sulfide.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's what it was. So I feel like that's what got into, I didn't tune it right and it started producing hydrogen sulfide. And I think that's what knocked out a lot of my acros, but, that's just a theory, but
so quickly give us a rundown in terms of how you do like to run your systems.
Okay, so from the basics, like starting with good live rock, and I've had rock established from those 17, 18 years, whatever it is right now that I've been in the hobby. I've had rock from that original nano tank I kept, so that bacteria has been moving along with me through this whole time. So I feel like that's a good basis for it. And so just getting good live rock, you know, borrowing it from a mature system or getting live rock. I love live rock from the ocean. I love
that. Dry rock, bad experiences. We're talking before the show, and I hate to pile on Carib Sea, but we're both kind of commiserating about the Carib Sea live rock. Not,
you know, the man-made
good
stuff isn't for us, I guess. But just getting that good live rock to start the system with, allowing it full time to cure cycle before you start adding things. And the biggest thing for me, and I think this is something that's missed often in the hobby, I guess it's a cultural societal thing, but we want everything now.
Yeah.
I want Amazon now. Like, hey, I ordered it at 9. I want it at 1, you know. And to me, like, a reef tank is never going to be that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, unfortunately, we have customers that have said, I just set up my system. I've cycled it. It looks like it's good. I'm like, how old's the system? They're like, a month and a half. I'm like, whoa.
Hold on, cowboy.
Hold on. And so we get a lot of that through our business alone. And, you know, we're just not that kind of business where we just want to sell you something. And I'm like, I'm not going to. No, yeah. No, I'm sorry. I'm like, if your system is 2 months old, I would prefer not to sell you an acro right now. What I would like to do is, if you would be open to it, is get some of these tester pieces to get, you know, like this LPS or this whatever, and let's see if it's there. And we can go back in discussions on where your system's at and what's happening. But so, at least for me, patience. There's a long way about it. Patience. Slow. Do things slow. Allow it to mature. Add one piece at a time. Don't buy a 10-pack.
Yeah.
You know, 6 months in, don't buy a 10-pack of whatever, of anything. Do not. Yeah. Just slowly add it, because the biology of the tank's got to adjust to that. You know, even adding fish, you got to let it adjust. Because if you don't, all of a sudden, boom, cyano, dinos. And then you erase all the work you've gotten to that point. And so to me, I preach patience. Patience, patience, patience. And which is weird, because from a commercial side of it, you're like, hey, I'd love to sell you 20, 30, whatever. But, you know, I just, that's not how we want to do business. That's not who we are. So.
Polo1126, thank you so much for that super chat. A little late to this one, but thanks for getting another awesome guest on. Yes.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
Rich Colombo says, I'm the master of the 6-month SPS reef. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think in terms of before you can kind of like start bringing in some more advanced, higher demanding pieces, it's going to take 6, 7, 8 months or whatnot to get a tank.
Yes.
Even if you're starting with a live rock, I kind of find like you don't really hit that sweet spot until you kind of hit that milestone.
Right. And I feel like, and Rich by reputation, I've never talked to him directly, but he knows his things with SPS. So I fully believe in that 6 months that he's got it going. He's probably got it down to his science. But, you know, like for me, at least with like new reefers that don't know what they're doing, I always feel like there's this trap with SPS. Because a brand new system, and like, you know, I say brand new, like 2-3 month cycle, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, when you put the acros in there, they're actually happy.
Yeah.
You put them in and their polyps are out, they're dancing, their flesh looks good, and you're like, hey, this SPS, they're not that hard. And then that 8 to 9 month hits, boom, like everything just crashes on it all at once. And I think it's just to me at least, it's just to build them, the biology of the system. Just once everything balances out bacterially, once everything balances out to that point, you've had no detritus settling, you've had no settlement, you've had no production of ammonia in that system that's starting to build up in different areas, you know, of leftover fish poop and whatever else like that. So these micro processes, your tank has never gotten dirty, is the best way I'm going to say it. It's never gotten to the point where it's dirty and has recuperated from that point. So initially when everything's clean, sure.
Yeah.
Everything's growing. And so that I call it the kind of it's like a 3 to 4 month trick.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, you keep any acro in a brand new tank at 3 to 4 months. But wait till it gets to 8, 9 months.
Something happens.
You're
it's always something's going to happen. There's going to be some sort of ugly phase that you didn't anticipate.
Yes.
And, you know, all those nice frags that you're talking about that seem to be doing fine. Right. Poof. And, you know, I've lost a lot of stuff, you know, over the years, you know, pretty much the first, 10 years or something like that, doing that sort of thing. And, but, you know, it wasn't as bad at the beginning, because it was all like live rock started tanks, and I think there was a lot more biodiversity and stuff. But in this dry rock age, when you've got people with young tanks and there's no biodiversity in there, then it's a tough long road. It's a haul, you know. But you know, there are some that have success doing it with live rock or dry rock, and I had Greg Carroll on, you know, who successfully started a tank with dry rock only and never ran into any issues. And so that's possible, you know, it's possible.
Yeah. There's so many ways to do it in the reefing hobby, you know, like again, I'm just used to my way, and I feel like it's easy. but yeah, there's so many ways to do in this hobby. That's what I love about it. You know, everyone's got their own interpretation. Even what corals people keep. There's so many different desires, preferences, or whatever. But that's why I love this hobby. It never gets old. So
Kevin Wadiak. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. Where is the best place to buy Ocean Direct live rock? I mean, I could rattle off a couple, but then we were talking before the show, and you should mention this.
Yeah.
You know, so I know there's Tampa Bay Saltwater, I believe, is one place. KP Aquatics is where I got my live rock a few years ago, and I don't think they have it in stock a lot, but when they have it in stock on their website, I think it gets snatched up pretty quickly. And you were telling me what before the show?
Yeah, so unfortunately, our sources are strictly within the wholesale environment, so it wouldn't be something that anybody would just be able to buy. But I mean, we've gotten some from our my partner Jake has imported. Oh, I was telling you about that earlier before we started. Was Solomon Islands is importing live rock now? So we've always had the opportunity to get Indo rock, and I say opportunity, it's rare. Like every once in a while, all of a sudden the importers be like, oh, we got some Indo rock ready if anybody wants any, and it's snatch and grab as quick as you can. But Aussie rock is usually typically available in most. Again, I don't know where as a retail and a customer where you would find it, but we got it through our sources, our importers. But the new thing now, I say new, what we've seen is Solomon Islands now is importing rock. And what's really cool about that rock is that, and I'm sure some of the hobbyists that have been around a while remember the Tongan rock, where it's this long, branchy pieces.
Tongan rock.
And so this Solomon Island rock is very similar. It's these long, branching pieces. So we ended up getting two boxes in from our direct importer, and I love it. I mean, that rock is gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's got good, thick sizes to it and everything else like that. So hopefully it becomes available retail wise to others. We don't sell rock or anything. It was just for our own purposes, but hopefully people will see that available soon, and it would be, I guess, the replacement for the Tongan rock that we don't see much anymore. I don't know why.
That came shipped, I'm assuming, like in what newspaper is that?
So this one was, so as I understand it, and Jake is the importer. Actually, I wish he was here to explain the process a little bit more. But as he was telling me, as far as I understand it, this first batch came in. It had flown here. So it was very quick, like within a day.
Oh, wow.
It was flown here. But it wasn't submerged. So there is still a little bit of curing, a little bit of die-off on that. But like I said, it hasn't been as bad as like some of the other rock that we've gotten, like the Indo rock that's been shipped over. So the shipping would take a little bit longer. And so this next batch, supposedly, I guess that didn't work out price wise for flying it over. It was just not much. It was too costly to be doing that. So I think the next batch of this is going to be shipped over. So, again, they'll probably do it wet, or I wonder if, because it's shipped over, it's a little bit cheaper to do. Maybe they'll send that over in water. I don't really know, but the next batch I hear is going to be by ship versus flown.
Great Bearded Reef, Paul says basically that he and Rich Colombo used Pristine Marine in Long Island for Australian live rock. And he said it actually, it's similar to the Tonga branch, at least the ones that he bought.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
Aussie rock?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. I thought it was just, I know it was branching. I guess Rich is saying it's cluster branching rock.
Yeah, so, you know, what's interesting, Rich is saying that because we ended up starting one tank, and we had, you know, a local, it was Austin Aqua Farms here in Austin, and they had brought in a bunch. He's got a really good Aussie connection. A lot of his stuff is from Australia, and he brought in rock, and I wonder if it's the same stuff that Rich is talking about, but it almost looked like it was like a giant A-can head that had built this really long trunk to it, so it was super thick. It almost looked like a dinosaur rib bone, is the best that I can explain it. It was like this shape and long, like a big old trumpet looking thing. It actually, now that I think about it, it seemed like super sized trumpet coral, like if they were just giant, had this big skeleton. But I don't know what original coral grew that. skeleton or whatever it was. But yeah, that's funny because Rich mentioned that and it reminded me of the rock that we got from Australia.
Well, here
it was very
here's the thing though, Great Bearded Reef. It's he's saying, Paul's saying that the Aussie rock is $30 a pound. Yuck.
Oh, ouch. Yeah. We paid a lot.
Oh, you did?
I don't remember the exact number.
You guys paid a lot, so.
It was quite expensive, much more than the Indo rock, and much less than the Solomon Island rock that we got lately. So
Wow. What about water testing, Ty? Are you guys doing a lot of ICP testing on your systems? Is that something you have ramped up or never really gotten into in terms of that kind of level of testing?
I would say that we've never gotten to that level. We just do kind of a spot check. So every once in a while, we'll grab a sample of each one, send an ISP, but ICP. I think we probably do it less than probably once a quarter, maybe even twice a year, kind of thing. We don't do it too often. So.
And what about trace element dosing? Do you guys do any of that, or is it pretty much you're doing water changes and you basically are leaning on the traces being replenished via the water changes?
Yeah. So the second thing you said there, the latter, we basically run, we got into those Comir auto water change units that they released a couple of years back for the large system. They have a big one and a small one. So we got a couple for the larger systems, mainly the SPS systems. We just do daily, daily water changes. On all the systems that are SPS, and the rest we just do our standard 20% every couple of months kind of thing. We don't dose any trace or anything like that. So
UV sterilizers or no UV sterilizers?
We do run UV sterilizers on almost all of our systems. We're big backers of the UV sterilizers. So
and the reason being, you just want to try to minimize the pathogens that are in the water column.
Yeah, going back to my conspiracy theory of the malignant bacteria from Malaysia, I'm like, zap it all, anything going through. And I know there's not a lot of bacteria in the water column itself, but we're just big proponents for fish even, just for the pest control on that. So we definitely run it. And algae control, we see all benefits from it. So.
So what are you guys doing in terms of nutrient control? Are you using any macro or anything, or is it just...
A lot of our systems, we're actually trying to put nutrients into the system, as weird as it sounds.
Yeah, because your corals are sucking it up.
Yeah, they're not true display systems, and they're disproportionately stocked with corals. So we're always doing the other situation. We're fighting to get nutrients back in it. So we actually put a lot of things on dosers. Potassium nitrate? I forget what it was. Yeah, potassium nitrate. Yeah. And we're just dosing constantly for nitrates and phosphates. I mean... If we ever have an issue with a system, it's not an out drop or anything else like that. It's because we ran out of nitrate dosing solution, and all of a sudden our nitrates dropped and our corals are ticked. So that's been our biggest kind of like thing to keep an eye on, as weird as it is. So,
Rich is wondering, what about when dosing bacteria or such? Do you guys turn down the UV for a little bit?
You know, like if he's asking about like a periodic kind of dosing bacteria to kind of replenish the system or anything, we don't really do that. I think we kind of experimented on one system where we kind of like, and it was one that we were having a rough time getting SPS to kind of establish themselves into. And so we started getting like different brands of bacteria and just kind of dosing a little bit, a couple every week, turning off all the pumps, letting it settle. I don't know if that ever really did anything for us, but we did try it for a little while there. But systematically, we don't really go around dosing any bacteria in our systems as a protocol, at least. So
besides the denitrate reactor and dosing bacteria, any other failed experiments?
Well, combining cultured and wild, that's been a failed experiment for us. What else has been a bad? You can go a little too crazy on dipping with antibiotics. Now, this isn't like the full system treatment that we do with the incoming ones, but like once we had mushrooms that were just not happy, and we're like, you know, we need to Cipro treat these guys. And so we took them out. We gave them a little dosage. I feel like we gave them a little higher dosage than what we should have given them. Poof. I would have never thought, but antibiotics just completely
annihilated
wiped
them.
from the planet. They were just non-existent anymore. And we're just like, wow, I did not see that going that way. And they were not the cheapest mushrooms. So we just wiped out a whole batch of them. And I was like, wow, okay. So, you know, that was something that lessons learned from us for that. So antibiotics, a little goes a long way, I would say. If you're always curious, go a little lighter. If you're not
That's,
sure.
You know, always go slow in reef keeping.
Here I am, slow. Like, Cipro! Ah!
So you're not a proponent of the KFC recipe there, and like hit them with the kitchen sink, everything but the kitchen sink?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be the best at quoting it because I don't know the full regimen. I've kind of read over it a little bit as my partner and I were discussing some of it. And I think he actually had discussions directly with the KFC owner. Again, he's the connection guy, not me. I don't know his name, but... and they had discussions about what he did and what he does. I felt like it was a little too much, so I didn't want to actually do it myself. And I think we kind of did a kind of a lower dosage kind of regimen to it. But I see like the experimental side of it, of doing it for sure. And I see the benefit of at least attempting if you see things are going wrong. I just feel like it's a lot. I was like, that's too much. That's why we separated our initial batch of Cipro treatment. And separated to the second one, the amoxicillin was completely separate, and we didn't do them together or anything because we didn't feel the need. But
so, what do you now? There's limitations on being able to get Cipro, right?
Right.
You got to go to oxalic acid.
Yeah. So who else? Someone just mentioned that to me in the last month or so. Do you use it?
I've used it. So, yeah, there is now a protocol. Chris Meckley and his wife, Amanda Meckley. Amanda actually wrote an article for Coral Magazine, and in that are the protocols now for dipping as well as full in-tank treatments for oxalic acid.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it was Bay Area Reefer. That's who it was, my good buddy. Yeah, he lives in Austin, too. I forgot. We just had lunch yesterday. Now I forgot about it. But he's the one who mentioned getting that. That's who it was. Yeah. You know, that's interesting. I might have to look at the write-up and see. It would definitely be easier for us because part of ours is just through a buddy that has a sister-in-law that's a veterinarian.
There you go. Like, hey, you got connections.
Can we get a 300 pills, please?
That's where you're getting all the interceptor, right?
Why are you putting all my sources out there, Keith?
Turned me on to the chewables, the interceptor chewables for the Canadian Vet Express. What was that play? I'm not even sure. I got up from there once.
What's
the name of the website?
I think that was the only time.
And they shut it down, right?
Yeah, we snuck in that one time and got it. Now the other one that I found is actually through Australia.
Oh,
really? So there's another one. And it's almost the same price as domestic, and they ship it over here.
Really?
That's so if we need and we don't want to, you know, I don't want to lean on favors too much in the industry and be like, hey, can we get this and this? I'm like, let's just order from Australia. You know? But what's funny is on their website, an Australian one, and I won't name names or anything like that, but it says on there, we do not ship to the U.S.
But they do.
Please do not order. And every time I'm like, click, click, and then the boxes still show up, and I'm like, ah, okay, we got an understanding here. Like, I'm gonna pay for it. Pretend I see nothing. You're gonna send it. Pretend you see.
There's
nothing.
An understanding
through the website. There's an understanding, but
that's awesome. What else did I want to ask you? I don't know, man. Anything else that you wanted to bring up, Ty, that we haven't talked about?
Man, you know, we've covered a lot already, Keith. Yeah. I'm trying to think of anything. We haven't, you know. I mean,
what's the future hold for Black Label Aquatics?
You know, for us, like, and I hate to even say it, but like, we've just, you know, we have, like, Jake, my partner, he runs a local fish store. He has a full other job.
Yeah.
And so for us, we're trying to get to that point. You know, I've gone more full time, but again, it's spaced out between me being home and my responsibilities with the kids as well. Yeah. And so for us, like we, this fall, finally, I think both of us will be mostly full time into Black Label. And so for us, you know, and I say that in a way that like, I don't want to take away from what we're doing right now. We're doing a lot right now. But for us to be, let's say, not distracted anymore with anything but Black Label, I feel like at that point, wow, I think to us, we're just going to be in front of everything at that point. I mean, we have the goods. We can bring in the goods. We can grow the goods. You know, it's like, and so we have all the things there. And I think we're being really methodical in our processes too, bringing in, treating everything, and putting them through the paces before it even gets into our customers' tanks, and having conversations with them about mixing and this and that too. And so I think we're all in that area where we're just right there. And so for us, come this fall after summer, I think the industry overall is going to kind of see more of a step up from us to be everywhere. We're just going to put it out there. Like, we got some awesome stuff. We're doing awesome things here. Come join us, be a part of this. It's just going to be a great run for us, I feel. So.
Well, I could tell, you know, from experience that SPS wise, man, you got top notch stuff.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Keith. I appreciate it. When they play with me, nice.
Yeah. So Rich wants to know what your regimen is for feeding corals as well as fish.
You know, for me, and man, this is going to sound really boring, Rich, but like, I'm just a fish poop guy. Like, I love to just throw those big herbivores as Tangs, as Angels, and whatever else, and just feed them like crazy. And I feed the fish like crazy, and they're just, you know, I can't think of a better term for it, but they're just crop dusting those acros and just pooping all over them, and just, you know, and all of those nutrients and all those, you know, and that to me is like, that's the world we're trying to recreate, that mini reef environment in our systems. And I think a big part of that is the fish. They are a big part of that system. And so to me, Rich, I feed the fish like crazy. And that's what we do. Now that makes it harder. And he's going to wonder, like, what about your frag tanks where you have like, you know, a couple of cold tangs and rabbit fish in there that just eat algae? Like, yes. So those we try to excessively feed, add more extra ornamental fish in there just to have some bio load, just to have some of that other part of the system in there. And to me, that's the big thing. We actually do not directly feed our corals anything. So we don't do aminos. We don't do any of those microfoods like reef chili or any of that stuff. And not that to say it doesn't work. It's just we have our nutrients tuned in a certain way that if we start throwing reef chili in there and all of a sudden we're like, oh, we're high in nitrates or phosphates because we've fed too much of this. And we just don't want to have those problems. So we like it nice and controlled. So.
Yeah, it sounds to me like, man, it's just a very simple system you guys got going on there. You're not getting too into the weeds in terms of going overboard with dosing stuff and equipment-wise and all that sort of thing. It's just kind of really back to the basics. You know, just roll up your sleeves and old school reef keeping. And that has proven to work, you know?
Yeah. And I get it. Like, if you got your own display tank and you want to tweak and play, I mean, that's what I used to do. Oh, let's try some aminos and see what that does. Let's try this and that. Totally get it. But from where we are now as a commercial kind of type setup, that's something we can't.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
As long as our corals look beautiful, we don't want to tweak. We don't want to play with those. Just pull a little bit more color out, you know, whatever.
That's a bad idea. When things are looking good, you know, and things are humming along and you're in the butter zone and all that sort of thing, don't really want to make some big changes to what you're doing. It's too risky.
So I pull that over with the kids, too. Life in general. Like, we're cruising with the three kids right now. I'm like, I am not changing a thing. We're just going to keep coasting it. Don't make any random changes. Yeah, we just take that into life, too.
Stick with what works. That's a good motto in reef keeping and in life. So, Ty, man, I want to thank you, man, for being a guest again. Always a pleasure talking with people. So people can find you guys online at blacklabelaquatics.com and on Instagram, Black Label Aquatics. Where else, man?
We're on Facebook too, Black Label Aquatics. You'll find us on Facebook too. I did want to throw that out there. That Black Label Corals that unfortunately started roughly the same time as us.
Oh, that's different. There's another one out there.
They're gone. They're gone for good reason.
Okay.
I don't want to get too much into it, but I think a lot of unhappy customers sent them on their way. But so yes, unfortunately, our name was very akin to theirs, and so I'm happy to say we're the only Black Label anything now. So people don't have to worry about Black Label corals anymore. We are Black Label Aquatics, and we were never anything like them. At least, hopefully, our customers agree to that too. So.
So yeah, you are the one and only Black Label.
One and only. That should be only one. We just survived everything else. So, Lakeith, thanks for always having me on here. I always have a blast chatting.
Likewise,
with you, and it's always good.
Likewise, man.
To chat reef with you any day, sir. So.
Thank you, man. Also, want to thank my sponsors one more time. Polo Reef. Make sure to check out Polo Reef's new YouTube video that drops this Friday. In the second episode of the Polo Summer Relaxation Series, Polo Reef gives us a moment to relax to view the stunning fish close-ups highlighting the vast collection of rare and beautiful reef fish housed at Polo. Make sure to subscribe to their YouTube channel at Polo Reef for video drop notifications. Champion Lighting and Supply, besides being a place for hobbyists to purchase saltwater aquarium supplies online, Champion Lighting is also a wholesale distributor for many popular brands. If you own an aquarium store or an aquarium service company, contact Champion Lighting through their website at championlighting.com to set up a wholesale account. GHL, personally, I'm all in on the GHL products. I have had a lot of success with their controllers, dosers, lights, KH director, etc. They produce high-quality German-engineered products. For more information or purchase their stuff, you can visit aquariumcomputer.com/USA. I also sell their products on reefbum.com, and right now there is a sale through June 30th. Save 15% on Profilux controllers and dosers. Big thank you to Paul, who's also the moderator as well as the president of the Boston Reefer Society. Please join and support your local reefing clubs. They are so important to this hobby. Also want to let you know that all episodes of Rapping the Reef Bum are available as podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Amazon. My next Rapping the Reef Bum live stream will be next Tuesday, July 2nd. I can't believe it's July already. Around the corner here.
Oh, my goodness. Summer's disappearing on
my
us.
Guest will be Lang Tsai from Ecosystem Aquarium. Remember Lang? The Lang Tsai cap. That's a very...
Yes, as I was wondering, when you said their name, I was like, oh, the cap!
That's
the beautiful cap.
That's a very well-known Montipora cupping latte. Yeah. Check out the full upcoming schedule of guests on reefbum.com under the YouTube section. Till next time, be safe and be well. Later.